You're listening to The Cowboy Pages. Come with me, Christy Crowley, as I travel America in search of cowboy poets and their wisdom. Today's book, Elko, Nevada, Chapter 11, The Specificity of Need, a continuation of my conversation with musician and poet, Bridget Reedy. My conversation with Bridget Reedy and Elko made a big impact on me. Certainly it had to do with her charisma, charm, talent, and openness. But I'd seen her perform. I knew she had those things going into the interview. No, what surprised me was both her understanding of her own artistic process and her relationship with her parents. Having spent time with and taught many teenagers personally, I felt I was hearing something new in Bridget's take on making art and her take on the people who've shaped her. I'm always curious about the artistic process.
Yeah.
So how does, well, first of all, how do you define yourself? Do you consider yourself a poet or a musician or both? Or, you know, you're talking about your life drawing and your so you really have this wide kind of scope of medium that you're working in.
And that's the way I am allergic to categories. People, I think, it's just human nature, but we try to categorize things. And with music, it just doesn't work, because it just doesn't work. I mean, we could be considered Americana, we could be considered cowboy, we could... I love all music. I listen to opera, I sing opera a little bit here and there. I'll do cowboy music that I love, and I think their music is the greatest, is a category of its own, you know? And I love just music in general. I think of myself as an artist, and it all comes out of the same place. Whether it's drawing or music or any other art form, I feel like it all comes out of the same place. It's not separate things.
So if it comes out of the same place, how do you take that nugget or that spark of an idea and know this is a drawing or this is a poem or this is a song?
I think it tells you. I think it's hard to tell, because I think all artistic process is full of intangibles. It's really, I think, if you see a beautiful sunrise, there are only so many ways that you can express it. You can express it by song, you can express it in a painting, you can express it in a poem. And I think inspiration chooses which one.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are days that I'm more drawn to drawing, so to speak. Not pardon the pun. I think it really depends on the day.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the artistic influence goes through a certain vein.
Mm-hmm.
And I think generally it's music.
And when maybe a song comes to you or a poem, do you find that it sort of all happens at once, or does a poem?
I think it's like a starting place. It's really fun. I get so excited. I get this burst of extreme joy when something new that didn't exist 3 seconds ago now exists, and I was the portal that it came through.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's actually something, too, that I am not necessarily creating these things. That once I've made them, they're out there. I think artists and poets and musicians are a doorway for the artistic, like, the stream of artistic to come through, because I've written fiddle tunes and stuff, and I won't be able to play them. I'll have one, and then a couple months later, I keep messing it up. I'll say jokingly, "Who wrote this?" Because it doesn't feel like yours,
mm-hmm.
You know. Once you've done it, it's just out there.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever find yourself going back to pieces you've written in the past and changing them, or it's out there?
I think it depends. I think. Especially in the type of music that I generally do, it's very much an emphasis on the folk process, which is, a song is never finished. Every time I sing a song, it's different. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's what gives it life. That's what gives it, you know, because if it's, I think there are a lot of people, spectacular musicians, even like just using for a moment classical music, that there are these exceptional musicians. I can't touch them. But they have nothing to say with their music. They'll play this amazing, exact thing that is technical and crazy amazing, but it says nothing. And B.B. King can play one note and crush your soul. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I always strive to do with music, is I try to express something. I try to say something
mm-hmm.
with what I play and what I sing and what I
write. I think you do.
Thank you.
You have a kind of specific and magical partnership with your father, right?
Yes.
As an artistic partner.
I've always valued that. I've always really valued our relationship. I think it's really special. From the very beginning, I learned yodeling from him. He would be yodeling, and I thought that was cool, so I wanted to do it too. He was my musical influence from the beginning. He's the reason I'm a musician.
And tell me a little bit about how that partnership works. Is you write songs together, you perform together?
Dad is a wonderful singer-songwriter poet, and he's also a photographer. But when we're writing a song, I forget who, if this was a Guy Clark quote, but it's the specificity of need, which is, it's hard to write something when there's no reason. When Elko's coming up, we need a new song, so we write one. And what we'll do is that generally we'll sit down together and we'll think of what we want it to be about. We'll come up with a concept, and then we'll think of generally the feel of the song, what it's going to be like, and then it gets down into the actual making of it. But once you have the concept, then words start to come and melodies start to come. And what I love his approach, because it's, don't try to get it perfect when you write it down first. You write everything. Write everything that comes to mind. And that's the way I've gone about with my novel that I'm writing. You just write everything. You can take stuff away later. It's like sewing. If you cut the fabric off, you're not going to get it back. You can take mm-hmm. away, but you can't put it back.
Mm-hmm.
So just write everything and then just slowly refine and refine and refine until you got something.
And the two of you perform together.
Yes, completely, and always have. He plays guitar and has always been my accompanist. And I admire him as a musician also. And he's giving me faces like, oh, no, stop. No, please, no, go on. No. But I love playing with him, because there's this, my favorite people that I've played with, there's always a charisma. I love being able to play off of somebody
mm-hmm.
because the music is important, but also the banter and the talking and the connection with who you're playing with in the in-between time is equally as important. And he is, in my opinion, one of the funniest people on the planet. I feel like, because if we drive, I'm happy if we don't do anything and drive all day, because I just talk with him the whole time. We come up with jokes. He has me laughing until I can't breathe. And I'm pretty picky. I love to laugh, but I like pretty sophisticated humor. And he always is funny. He's crazy funny.
It's pretty cool to have people
but
like
so,
that.
But so that translates on stage too, where if we can play off of each other. He can throw me a funny thing and I can bounce it right back. We can play off each other really well.
Going back a little bit to your artistic partnership with your father, how does that work in terms of also him being your parent? Does that ever get sticky?
Nope. I don't even know how
he's
that could
possibly
be. He's
here in the room, so she
be.
Can't say
No,
too
actually,
much.
No. I'm completely honest. I have strove my whole life to be completely and utterly honest. And I've always been completely baffled by how a parent could be a hindrance to a friendship in any way. Because we are partners. We are really wonderful friends. He's one of my best friends. And the fact that he's my dad is great, because I get to be with him all the time. And I think, the fact that he's my parent has never had any influence on, like, problematically, you know? It's never been a problem. It's been, if anything, even better, you know?
So we got to talk a little bit about your relationship with your dad.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about your mom.
My mom is one of the most amazing people on the planet. She's a textile artist. She has a degree in textile arts, which doesn't mean just weaving or braiding. Although she rawhide braids and she does amazing work like that, and she does horsehair. She also weaves and she knits and she crochets. Now, all of those are pretty menial terms for what she creates. she'll design these beautiful things. She creates, it's one of her most beautiful, her artistic outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Her way for inspiration to come through is that. And any type of fiber, it could be plastic bags, for goodness sake, she'll make something.
Mm.
She also is the most amazing cook ever.
That is.
And that's another one of her artistic outlets.
In terms of your homeschooling, does that mom kind of
just
do that?
Yes, mom does most of the stuff that gets being angry at. she gets to teach me math and spelling and history and everything, mm-hmm. and then dad gets poetry and music and everything,
wow.
but mom gets the drudgery.
Yeah.
But she teaches it beautifully. She's a gifted teacher for the way mm-hmm. that one-on-one. What I love is that if I'm not understanding something, she'll come up with like 7 different ways of approaching it until one fits.
That's a pretty amazing teacher.
And the usual, like, history, I usually think of the people going like, oh, history. We go through it. We look at the mythology and the culture of whatever we're studying and get way into it. We look at what they ate, what clothes they wore, what their arts were, what it was to live then. Like Greek mythology, which I've loved. I could talk for hours about it. It's crazy. I love the way that she teaches. She makes things fresh and interesting, always. And specially tailored for me, too.
That's great. That's really cool. So I'm hearing a little bit like maybe math is not your favorite.
Well, it's funny because I love math. I'm good at math. I can do math very well. I can do it very well, and I enjoy it. But in the middle of Algebra 2, when the textbook is, you look up at it from the sheer quantity just kind of gets you down at some point. It loses some of the fun when you're doing it for a really long time, and it seems intentionally repetitive and mean. Like the person sitting there was like, oh, they'll hate this. This will be so fun to watch the thousands of students hate this one.
That's funny. Bridget, this is probably a little bit leading the witness, but as I was looking at your website and kind of thinking about you, you're almost like a child prodigy, right? You came to this so young, and people, you know, your name comes up, and people have these great stories of, you know, she was 2 years old yodeling on the counter, and you know, she was performing as this little tiny kid, and how talented you were at such a young age, and how the ability to get up on stage at a young age is pretty, it's pretty magical and it's pretty special.
I think it always came from a place of joy that I can credit Dad for. There's never been any reason to be self-conscious or afraid. It's just, music is fun, music is beautiful. It's a way to communicate with people. Hey, look, there are all these people around, go up and yodel. Great. I love music. I love yodeling. These are nice people. I want to share it. That's what it's always been.
So do you get any stage fright? Do you ever?
No.
And you never have?
Never have. Because it's useless. I love being on stage.
I'm going to remember that the next time I get stage fright. I'm just going to say, you know what? This
is
useless.
It's useless. There's no reason to do it.
I love that.
It's just like, people always ask that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think, much like not liking snow, there's not a reason. It's sort of just a mainstream assumption at some level, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just like kids, teenagers shouldn't like their parents, and sisters shouldn't like their brothers.
Yeah, right, right.
I've always really railed against mm-hmm. all of those.
mm-hmm. So, again, I know this is a little bit leading the witness, but I was a baby ballerina, so I was a dancer at a very young age. And there was kind of a similar thing in that you get good really young, and there's a part of your youth that is really important. And there's a thing that happens around your age, when I was around your age, where suddenly age becomes this kind of thing looming over your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a little part of me that had a hard time letting go of being young and good. That it was like that was really tied into my identity, and that sense of, ooh, you know, you throw the term
completely
prodigy around all the time. But, you know, you're not going to be young and good forever. You're going to be really good forever.
Right.
Does that ever, you know, creep into your head?
Not really. I think occasionally there might be something that goes through my mind, but it's never been, like, a real problem. I think throughout my entire career, which sounds funny coming from a 15-year-old, but whatever age I've been at, I've always wanted to be the best for whatever for myself, not the best in the world, but the best for whatever my expectations are for that time then. When I was 10, I didn't need to be singing like a 20-year-old. When I was 2, I didn't need to be singing like a 10-year-old. I wanted to do exactly the best that I could do for myself then. And that's what I want to do for the rest of my life. I think there is a fun kind of novelty to being young and good. But then again, sometimes it gets in the way, too. Because I just want to be one of the cats, you know? I want to go up. I want to play with people. If there can sometimes be the, oh, she's young, she's not going to be as good problem that I have to break through. And I think youth doesn't hold anything on music. I think age doesn't either. Mm-hmm. Music keeps you young. Glenn Orlin was young. He music kept him alive, you know? There are people, there's a guy that plays jazz guitar that I played with in Helena. His name was Blackie. He can barely walk around. He's kind of cross-eyed, but he plays the coolest licks on the guitar. He's so, and music is amazing that way. I think it, once again, it breaks through all the barriers. Age, nope, not a problem. Nationality, not a problem.
So do you, when you look ahead into the future in your, you know, magic crystal ball, what do you envision your future looking like?
I never look too far into the future. I try to live in the moment. But I think I will always be an artist. I want my life, like in my ideal world, I want my life to always revolve around beauty and a love for what I do. And where I am, I could live anywhere. I could, but I want to be able to, whatever it is, I want to be artistic my entire life. I think because that's such an important part of who I am, that's what makes me happy, you know. Some people, it's running. Some people, you know, I think being athletic also. But it's this deep, deep part of me that I don't think I could ever live without. I think I'm always, I always want to be an artist.
There it is, clarity. A knowing so deep it defies questioning. Bridget has found a place for herself in art and in this world. What I find so refreshing is how she doesn't seem to question her right to make art or the value of her own voice. So many budding artists do, and this internal self-doubt can silence and cripple faster than even the harshest of outside critics. John Adams once wrote, "I must study politics and war, that my sons may have liberty to study mathematics and philosophy. My sons ought to study mathematics and philosophy, geography, natural history, naval architecture, navigation, commerce, agriculture, in order to give their children a right to study painting, poetry, music, architecture, statuary, tapestry, and porcelain." It's so clear to me that Bridget's education at the feet of her extraordinary parents has given her the wings to fly and the confidence to know she can. It reminds me how important this first relationship is, this parental relationship, in shaping not only our view of ourselves, but in how we see the world. What an extraordinary thing to be given so much love, so much tending, so much time, care, and nurturing. It's clear Bridget has been cherished, and so it makes sense she cherishes the world around her. I'm thankful for the reminder that we mostly get out of people what we put into them. And I'm thankful to you for listening. To learn more about our show, Cowboy Poets, or to see pictures of my travels, visit thecowboypages.com.